Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, didn't leave very much to my ma and me, except this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that my daddy ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue. Well, he must have thought that it was quite a joke, and it got a lot of laughs from lots of folks. Seems I had to fight my whole life through. Some gal would giggle and I'd turn red, and some guy'd laugh and I'd bust his head. I'll tell you, life ain't easy for a boy named Sue.
Welcome to Free State, everybody, and this is part two of our Christmas Week Best Of special. When we first started the podcast, we had no idea about anything, what we were going to do, how we were going to do it, whether it would work, whether myself and Joe could stand each other, and those questions all remain in play. But we were up in Belfast on Thursday night. I stayed with Joe in Belfast and we went and met Huey Russell, the late Huey Russell, the Irish News. We did pictures with Huey and we talked to the Irish News about the podcast. And while we were there, somebody called me and said, would you be interested in interviewing Peter Taylor next week? And I said, yes. And it was one of those moments where I saw what the podcast could do, because I thought, I'd love to interview Peter Taylor. I'd love an interview or a conversation with Peter Taylor and Joe Brawley. And that's what we got. And we recorded it the following week and we didn't put it out for a long time. And people used to message us saying, where is the Peter? Did you actually really interview Peter Taylor? What happened to the Peter Taylor interview? And Joe wanted to keep it until we got an audience that it deserved. And when we put it out, it was really worth waiting for. And we're going to start our best of with one moment from that interview.
An illustration of why Peter had credibility and therefore the unrivaled access to my community, to the provost. Like, no one else had the access that you had, Peter. I mean, I spoke this morning on the phone to Raymond McCartney, one of the hunger strikers. And I told him I was meeting Peter and he said, please, please pass on my fondest regards. And that's not to say that you were in any way soft on the IRA and its horrific campaign, but that it was handled honestly. And I think that that must be the greatest epitaph that any human being can have, that they fought for the truth and that they... So that's the context of Peter's access and the book that follows.
Talk to us about that, Peter, because Joe touched upon it there. How difficult was it to maintain those contacts? And you made contacts everywhere, like as this book demonstrates, you know, you understood that to be your job, to make contacts on all sides. But how difficult was that to do? And you talk, you know, in the book you mention even interviewing a prison officer who had made this heartfelt, you know, when the Republican prisoners were looking for, and he actually said he totally sympathized with the Republican prisoners' position, and he understood why they needed those five demands.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks later, after your interview was broadcast, he was murdered by the IRA. So to maintain it on a personal level must have been difficult as well.
I mean, that was one of the most difficult moments, or the most difficult moment in my 50 years of covering the conflict, when the IRA shot dead Desmond Irvine, the secretary of the Prison Officers Association, who gave this remarkable interview for a prison officer, let alone the secretary of the POA, and basically said he respected the IRA for what they were doing. This time it was the No Wash Dirty protest. Mm. An astonishing interview for which, you know, he was criticized by some in his community, but also was praised by many in his community and other prison officers for being honest about what the situation clearly was, as opposed to the way it was presented by the British government in the way that Joe has illustrated from the Index on Censorship piece. And I just felt sick when I heard that the IRA had shot him dead. And shortly afterwards, I always remember this, I got a phone call from a journalist in Belfast who said, this was at home, he said, how does it feel to have blood on your hands? And I was taken aback, and I just cut the conversation short. And it was that, the killing of Desmond Irvine, and that phone call from a colleague with that remark, I thought, you know, that's it. Maybe it's time I stop reporting Northern Ireland. It's coming too close to home. You know, he was accusing me of being responsible for the death of Desmond Irvine because I'd interviewed him.
I thought of that the other day. I dropped into Burns in Strokestown. And Francis was behind the bar, and Burns is a grocer's at the front. You wouldn't know it's a pub. And they have a couple of pumps out the front, old, old diesel and petrol pump. And I went in, and you go in there and you're always, there's a cheer goes up, you know, and it's just pure Ireland. Like, it's all farmers and, you know, maybe there'd be a few girls there the odd time. And the conversation centered on sheep nuts. Now, sheep nuts. You probably don't know what sheep nuts are.
Sheep testicles?
No, they're feed for sheep and lambs. And the conversation was, there was an old fella saying that there was nothing better than sheep nuts to gain and maintain an erection. And the so the bar in general was nodding in agreement with that, and they were saying that, you know, you couldn't beat sheep nuts for an erection. If you were going to meet a girl and you're in any way self-conscious about your performance, eat a handful of sheep nuts. And this was being discussed very, very seriously, to the extent that I started to ask questions about it. And then Francis
says... I bet you did. I'd say you were curious.
Francis said to me, who runs the bar and pulls a terrific pint of Guinness, he said to me, he says, I have a bag in here, Joe. He said, I can sell it to you. And it was a 25-kilogram bag of Super U nuts, 25 kilograms, for €12.10.
Right.
Now, let me just put that into context for you. I did some subs. Viagra Connect, I checked.
I was going to ask
morning.
You this. Yeah.
Yeah. So for a 50 milligram tablet, it's €6.25. So you buy them in fours and it costs you €25, right?
Right.
25 kilos of sheep nuts, you know, which has the entire population, male population of Strokestown roaming around, like hyenas at mating time. Anyway, 25 kilograms of Viagra would be, I worked out, €3,125,000. 25 kilograms of sheep nuts, which does exactly the same job, according to the Strokestown man, is €12.10. So there is an opportunity there.
Do Pfizer know about, like, Pfizer have got a big presence in Ireland. Do they know that the sheep nuts are undercutting them this way in certain parts of the country?
Well, actually, I contacted a friend of mine at Goldman Sachs and said, we need to get in on this. I mean, we need to get in on this, you know, but I mean, where else would you get that? I mean, you'd obviously have to, you'd have to do some, you know, testing on humans and that type of thing. But according to the Strokestown, it's also a very substantial meal. Sheep nuts, they're full of roughage.
You're killing two birds with one stone. Have you tried this yet?
You're killing two birds with one stone. Could be a brilliant catchphrase, a brilliant sort of, that could be your sort of brand logo. Kill two birds with one stone.
For me, the whole essence of the GAA is about where you're from and giving your all to that, or where you live. I mean, if you move somewhere, look, that's, the GAA is great because it can bring you into that. But at its heart is your parish, representing your parish, representing whatever, whether it's your school, you know, in Dublin, it can be, the parishes can be ill-defined, but it's that deep affinity to what you were brought up with. And then you represent your county, which is just a bit of an expansion on that. And, like, we don't see county players very often changing location. Like, they don't, unless they moved, you know, which is fair enough. If you have a 200-mile commute, I can understand the guy. But even then, most guys stay with their, you know, I admire greatly all the Mayo guys who train in Dublin and always play with Mayo. Never a sign of them ever transferring to another county. And you know, I think that's the heart and soul of the GAA. To figure out the other stuff, I can't understand it, because it's just not part of me. It's not part of what was shared with me. And I think for the vast majority of GAA people, it's not really what the thing is about, and it's been creeping in over and over and over again in terms of people moving around and doing jobs, and to me, that's kind of a failure of the system as opposed to any individual doing anything wrong. I'm not saying any of these people are doing anything wrong. I can't understand it myself personally.
Well, I mean, they are doing something wrong. It's against the rules of the GAA to be paid to manage a team. It's a flagrant breach. I mean, I know that you didn't take a penny when you were managing Dublin.
No, I've never taken a penny to manage anything to do with the GAA. And I wouldn't. But again,
in the end, surely in the end of it all, I mean, and I've thought a lot about what the GAA is and the ideals around it. In the end, forget about the winning and all of that. When I sit down with my old Derry teammates or my old Dungiven teammates, there's a sense of loyalty. Deep loyalty and something, a journey that's shared with them on and off the field. And what we see now, I think, is this grubby professional sort of cartel of managers, exactly like the League of Ireland. You know, I mean, it's only a matter of time before people like Mickey Hart are wheeled out and say, well, you know, it's always been my dream to manage Louth. And, you know, it's always
like Ryan Tuberty's favourite county. I love your county.
I love you. Please don't mention Ryan. It's hard to, honestly, it's just tried to recover from GB News and people, places like that. But, you know, or, you know, it's always been my dream to manage Derry. And I am deeply depressed by what's happening to this beautiful thing, you know, that we've grown up with and that we love.
What do you like when you're wrong about something?
Well, I would say I'm a world class apologizer. You know, do you mean if I'm? So I say I should do apology classes.
Really?
Yeah, you want me to tell you how to do an apology?
Go on.
So never mealy mouthed. You never sort of, well, if I have offended anybody, you know, a sort of the Boris Johnson style sort of non apology. You know, all of that. It's the modern thing now. This is how you do an apology, right? I want to apologise for what I said. I should never have said that. It was wrong. It was hurtful. It was insulting to you. you know. And when I think back on it, it's embarrassing for me. I'm going to apologize for that. It will never happen again.
Why do you think people don't apologize like that?
Because it's not really an apology.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made a very, very hurtful remark once about, you know, people, honestly, people played it down since, but I made a very hurtful remark on television about Marty Morrissey that I'm extremely fond of. And it was a thoughtless, careless, cruel remark, which I won't repeat, and which I cringe even when I think of it, because it demonstrated a capacity in me for cruelty, for reckless disregard of Marty. And you know, and I still, when I hear it being mentioned, you know, Marty referred to it in his autobiography, which he asked me to launch. I says, thanks a fucking million, Marty, like, you're a fucking full chapter. You didn't need a fucking full chapter about it again. Like, oh, she was like, how hurt I was. I'm like, fuck me. You know, Joe came and he apologized in person and he talked to me with the best of friends. I said, fuck me, thanks a million, Marty, you know. But and so, you know, when something like that happens, you know, it really is. You know, it has to be a proper apology. Yeah, I was sort of jokey with you when I was saying about, but that's how you, I mean, I should take apology classes.
There's one thing I do feel conscious of as well, and we talk about the Israeli government and their propaganda war and what is happening in Gaza, which is horrific. And I'm also conscious, and I was struck, and I have mentioned before, I have Jewish friends who are equally, as you say, as many Jewish people are, and most Jewish people are, horrified by what's happening in Gaza and how the Israeli government is dealing with things. Yet they also feel this sense of kind of abandonment and being alone. And as a friend of mine put it to me, he said, it's not what you say sometimes, it's what you don't say. And he was talking to me, actually. He was talking to me, but I think he was making a more general point as well. And there was a piece in the Times last week by Deborah Ross with the headline, "As a secular Jew, I didn't feel I could comment on the war till now." And when we talk about Jewish response and protests about Gaza, I think it's also important, and we have done this, I think we have done this. We've talked about the barbarity and the savagery that Hamas has committed. But I think it's always important.
But isn't it an interesting thing that everybody feels the need to keep emphasizing that? I mean, can't go onto the BBC or any news channel now, even though now the bodies are just piling up and we see this blitz on this defenseless problem, without saying, do you first condemn Hamas?
No, I'm not saying
until you say that. I mean, the other day,
so
in Parliament.
Let me make this point, because that's not right. What I'm saying. I'm saying it's important that people who are feeling under attack feel that the assault on them is actually acknowledged and recognized. It's only to do with creating a situation where the people of Gaza are Hamas. You know, the Onion headline, which captured it perfectly. You know, child in Gaza fails to condemn Hamas with his dying breath. You know, that kind of ridiculous. You know, do you condemn?
Yeah, but
Hamas?
that's what the Israeli government wants.
But forget about the Israeli government for a minute, and let's talk about, you know, people who Jewish people who feel abandoned once again.
And in just, Ireland?
No, it doesn't matter where they are, but like, people listen to our podcasts everywhere. And that's all I'm saying. I just want to acknowledge
that. I agree with that.
I know you do.
It's no good for the Israeli people,
no,
what's happening.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's a disaster for them.
But the Israeli people who want to live peaceably. The reason for this is, if you don't acknowledge, and if that is ignored, the point about this piece was, it mentioned that there was a letter for artists for Palestine with 2,000 signatories. And she writes in it, I read it once, twice, a third time, then a fourth. Had the letter been abridged? Surely it's been abridged. The fact is, there was no mention of Hamas. There was no mention of the rape, torture, kidnapping, and murder of babies, children, grandparents. Children, grandparents, young people dancing peacefully at a peace.
Do you know, I feel a wee bit insecure at the minute, you know, but these people who are being fucking slaughtered with thousands and thousands of missiles and bombs, I think there's a fucking priority here. I think we say, first of all, look, you got to stop this fucking slaughter. And this idea of teams, you know, like, even President Biden talking about, oh, that's the other team. You know, as if it's a fucking game.
It's not.
And this idea of, oh, you know what?
Let me finish this point. Honestly, let me finish this fucking point. Because that's not what it's about at all. It's about acknowledging that unless you actually acknowledge other people's suffering as well, this is not a boo-hoo.
You can't turn on the fucking TV without it being acknowledged. No. From the start, that's the only thing acknowledged.
Why would that anger you?
I'll tell you why it angers me.
Why?
Because there's a hierarchy of propaganda.
There is
a
hierarchy.
You cannot now do it. I do it every morning. I read all the papers and I look at them and they always start with Hamas, Hamas, Hamas before they come on to it. They talk about murder in relation to Palestinians, died in relation to Israelis, died. And everything is looked at through that hierarchy. Okay, that's the way it's looked at. That's the reality. The weak are on their own, okay? Let me make it clear to you. It must be very confusing and disheartening for Israeli people living in many parts of the world. They're looking at their TV screens and they're seeing hundreds of thousands of demonstrators going around waving Palestinian flags, talking about stop the slaughter, etc., etc., etc. You know, but this is the position that these people have been put in through no fault of their own. And this is why the only thing that's important at the moment is to stop the slaughter, to return the hostages, to stop the slaughter.
I agree with that.
Okay, after that, then you can start to talk about these other much more refined, much more nuanced things. If priests could marry, if we had a more common sense approach from the top, you know, we'd have so many people like yourself who have so much to give, who would have been in that position.
I think having the option, Joe, for a guy... and again, whatever patch you want to go down with this podcast, but even having females, I think that's something that needs to be looked at as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Church. It's about time. But to have the option to enter into a relationship with another person while it's also serving your faith, I think, why couldn't you do it? A GP can do it. A surgeon can do it. Why can't the priest do it?
Evangelists in our community, people who work, you know, who are communitarians. Now, on the other hand, Philly McMahon.
He looks like a priest.
Father. Father Philip.
He's sitting there rolled as eggs.
This is not fair. I'm nodding off there. I thought I was in Father Ted there.
Is that why? So he used to sit beside me on the bus, though. So on the long journeys back, I last year, a question here, and he put me to sleep.
We're
in Dublin. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Jerry.
I had so much adrenaline after the game. I'd speak to Jerry to go to sleep. But I think for me, it was the curiosity piece. Like, this fella is like, just to give you some context, because he probably won't give it himself, he was the class clown of the group. Like, he was the one with the banter and the crack. And you get the young lad to go up to the top of the bus and say, go, Pat wants you up there. And someone would walk up, and as the young lad, he's, Pat, do you want me? He'd say, no. And he'd turn around, everybody would be breaking it. little kind of, that was Jer, like, you know, putting stuff in your boots, all that sort of stuff. That was him. And then, so he's always up to mischief. And then to have this other side of him.
Yeah.
That was that curiosity piece.
And the trash talking.
And the way he played.
Did you hear the trash talking?
Not really. I never, like, I always knew he'd a bit of a...
Give us an example, Jerry, of the sort of trash talking.
Well, we I'll tell you an interesting one, but the guy is still playing, but they're out of the championship, so I can tell you. But in 2013 in the league, I got put off against Mayo just before half time.
Don't mention Mayo in front of Joe here. It's the child, you the Mayo here.
Please do. We can edit this bit out.
You're going to tell you what. A certain player came up and gave me a clap on the back. And he said, well done, Jer. Go off now and say a few prayers, you know. So, and for yourself.
That's not bad, in fairness.
No, that's what that person said to me, right? And he is still playing, so I won't tell you his name, because it's not fair on him, right? But when we bet him the 2013 final, I made a beeline for him and I went up and shook his hands and I says, hard luck, I'll say a few prayers for you tonight.
I love it.
And I kept that in my locker for, yeah, so I was delighted with that. So I knew I was never going to lose to Mayo that day because I said I couldn't lose that pair.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What happened afterwards then? You know, the rioting and the hate movement coming out. And, you know, this sort of fantasy of the other that's peddled. And I thought watching it, you know, that this dehumanization of the other, you know, in this case it's immigrants, often with these people, it's this conspiracy that they're trying to replace the Irish sort of bloodline, all of that nonsense. And I recall that when Matthew Collins came into us, the recovered neo-Nazi, who's now sort of a leading light in the Hope Not Hate movement and has infiltrated these neo-Nazis and is very interested in what's happening in Ireland. He said, hatred's not a political problem. You know, it's a psychological one, existing only in the mind of the hater. You know, I mean, in his case, you'll recall that he said to us, Dion, I mean, if we had a problem, go and smash somebody in the face with a hammer. Something's not being done with the roads, smash somebody in the face with a hammer. And, you know, this hatred was unleashed again with those riots. And I mean, and they're all called, you know, all these anonymous trolls, they're all called like Glow Rogan and God Emperor and things like that. You know, obviously people with inadequacies leading sort of a fantasy life. I mean, Dermot Devlin, who's a champion of human rights in the North, you know, and Dermot is severely disabled and wheelchair bound, and a person of great integrity. And these haters started to attack him because he tweeted that the rioters in Dublin were exploiting the knife attack at the nursery to spread hatred and violence, that there was no link between these things. And they started to subject him to the most sickening abuse. You fucking gnome. Shut your mouth, you cunt gnome. You cunt dwarf. You know. And I think that there's a very important role being played by Elon Musk and the other social media magnates who have allowed all of this stuff to flourish. This all should be shut down. You know, people should have to reveal their identity.
Well, that's true, but I think there's actually, it's also important at this stage to distinguish between Elon Musk, who is now kind of adjacent to fascists, and the other social network owners.
No, but all the social networks are exactly the same. Well, I mean, they're not being policed. People are allowed to be anonymous, you know, and it's always, like, it doesn't matter to someone like me. But I just thought of how hurtful that must have been for Dermot, being attacked in that way. Here's at resting bitch face.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice fellow. Have you met Reston Mitchell?
No, but I'm looking forward to.
He's a lovely fellow. You know, he's a bit like a boy named Sue. He never forgave his parents. Hi, what's your name? I'm Reston Mitchell. Sorry, what was that? Reston Mitchell. Could you just say? Sorry, I'm not getting that. It's Reston Mitchell. I fucking kill my father. The hordes of undocumented men roaming our country, plaguing our children, attacking, harassing them, and creating terror. Our children are no longer safe in their schools or even able to play outside. I see them playing outside all the time. I'd imagine even adults are no longer safe when you have these groomers in their areas. It is not far right to exercise and expect your right to be safe. You are a twisted C-U-N-T. Or the glamorous brunette, it's not like me. And then there's a Dr. Anne McCluskey, who I think was a doctor at one stage. Traitor. it's all so weird, but it's all the same. Traitors like you are always looking for vindication. You are demonising the good Irish people of this country with your nonsensical slurs and distorted thinking. Globalist shills like you only serve the bankers who pay your media handlers and commit our people to serfdom. I think, and then, you know, you've got Conor McGregor, who's like, oh, if a building is earmarked for refugees, evaporate that building immediately. Ireland, we are at war. And they're all called things like, you know, Glow Rogan and God Emperor. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Emperor must have had such high hopes for their firstborn when they named him God. You know, he's going to go to Trinity and then Harvard. He'll probably find the cure for cancer. God Emperor, go into the world. And here he is, tweeting me. And this was my favourite insult of the millions that I've got. I can only say this. Joe Brawley wanks dogs. does he think that I work at a dog fertility clinic? Mr. and Mrs. God Emperor, if you just bring Rover down to the consultation room too, Mr. Brawley will be with you in a moment.
It also make sense of the world. You know, it doesn't make sense of the world in a...
It's a bit more than that.
Yeah, but
I think it's exciting in the way that a really gory video game's exciting.
But I think
conspiracy
theories at least allow you to believe that the world is just full of random chaotic events with very little control over it. And most of the time, most of the things that happen and go wrong are caused by a cock-up rather than conspiracy. Is kind of just it doesn't allow for much to make much sense. But we're like everything else, all the things that have given consolation over the years, including religion, have all been around to kind of allow you to make sense of the world. And conspiracy theories, okay, they also are exciting, but they do allow some sense of kind of order where otherwise there's chaos. And if you're online all the time, there's no coincidence that all this accelerated during lockdown when people were online all the time.
Absolutely.
But if you're online all the time, you can really believe, okay, life is tough and life is hard and people are struggling. But at the same time, if you go online, you can then think that, the world is a dark and desperate and miserable place.
And then you turn on the news and they think they're concealing all this from us.
Yeah, yeah.
None of this is true because we know that there are thousands of Pakistani and refugee grooming gangs and Ukrainian grooming gangs roaming the country, raping our children, you know, sexually abusing them, impregnating our white women to get rid of the Irish bloodline. And why is this not on the news? What the hell? Mm. What do you call a boy who does the news every day? It's an awful straight fella on RTE.
Oh, Ray, yeah.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong?
Ray, come on, Ray.
What the hell? Jesus, Ray.
For fuck's sake, Ray.
Just tell us the truth. We know it anyway, you know. And this Coudon, for example, I mean, obviously it's an absolutely ridiculous, nonsensical thing. Not a single piece of evidence to support it. But it was borrowed itself from the Satanic Panic of the 1980s. That's what it was called, the Satanic Panic in America. And hundreds of thousands of otherwise ordinary Americans came to believe that secret groups of Satanists were operating out of daycare centres. So they stopped sending their kids to daycare centres because the Satanists were torturing and molesting children for rituals. Now, a landmark study was done on that. And what they concluded was that it made no difference that the parents were bringing home their children unharmed every day, that the parents could see for themselves that there was nothing going on in the daycare centres, that no bodies were being reported missing, that no children were reporting sexual abuse. None of that made any difference. Once the panic spread, and once the parents were communicating with each other in relation to that, by phone, there was no mobile phone in those days, and by talking, then you were the odd one out if you said, well, hold on a second. We're protecting our children. What the hell's wrong with you, brother, you globalist shill? Now that you've taken a break from wanking dogs for 5 minutes, what the hell is wrong with you? They're raping our children.
Stop wanking that dog, Frolly.
Jesus, we've got to get t-shirts made.
As I walk this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope gone? Is there only pain, hatred, and misery? Oh, yeah. And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I want to know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Ooh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? And as I walk on through troubled times, my spirit get so downhearted sometimes. Sometimes, where are the strong? And who are the trusting? And where is the harmony? Sweet harmony now. Each time I feel it slipping away, it just makes me want to cry. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Ooh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
Free State Podcast is a Gold Hat production in association with Swan McGee.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.